The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 287 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the 2023 Kia Soul, the BMW 760i xDrive, the Ford F-150 Lightning, Christian von Koenigsegg's choice for his last car, self-cleaning touchscreens, BMW or Mercedes-Benz's new operating system, a refresh of the Cadillac XT4, and what to do with EVs when there's a power outage. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 287 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Salmon from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from True Car. How's that? True Car.
Sure. Sounds true.
Sounds perfect.
It sounds like you made that up at the last minute.
I know. I said it with such question. I wasn't true.
Well, you know, if it had been ChatGPT saying it, then of course, you know, I wouldn't believe it, but.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from Ars Technica.
All right. Let's see. Robbie, you go first.
All right. So this past week, I drove the 2023 BMW 760i xDrive. It is BMW's fancy schmancy gas-powered sedan. I have driven the i7 for about 45 minutes previous to this. This is the gas version. It has a 4.4 liter twin turbo V8, so totally different. It's funny because BMW, a long time ago, they're like, we're going to build this modular setup where we can build a gas car and an electric car on the same line. And then just kind of nothing happened for a long time while they were working on that. And now they're putting cars out into the world that they are modular setups. You can get a gas car or an electric car. And it's really fun because what happens is you end up liking the electric car more. Like it's a good car. It's very fancy. It has all these fancy bits in it. But when you put your foot down, you know, it's got a V8 twin turbo. When you put your foot down the gas, it doesn't have that immediate response that you would get from the i7. And for some reason, like, oh,
you know, 500 plus horsepower would have immediate response, but.
That's the weird thing is that it doesn't have
turbochargers. Just you know, as good as they are, you know, it's like, yeah, I'll be with you in a second. Let me finish this other call first.
Because when I'm good and ready.
If you wanted to take off, like right when you take off to start up, like the turbocharger would have to just be running all the time, like ready to go. Like, no, okay, I'll wait. No. So, yes, it has 536 horsepower. It is a large four-door sedan. There's plenty of room in the back. In fact, in the back is where the party starts. The armrests of the doors, there's like a little, like an iPhone-shaped little display that you can use to adjust.
Because you can never have too many touchscreens in a modern luxury car, right?
There's not enough touchscreens in luxury cars. And so you can use it to adjust turn your windows, put those up and down, put the little shades up and down, adjust your heat, do some other things. But more importantly, it allows you to lower this giant display that takes up the entire between you and the front passengers. There's this giant display. How tall? How wide is this display? Hold on. I probably should have looked at
2 inches. I think
it's huge. Yeah. It takes up like the whole space.
And if you are in the front seat, if you're the driver, you can't see anything behind you.
Can't see.
There's no digital mirror available. Although,
yeah, that's the weird thing. Is that like you can still see out the side mirrors, which is like, all right, fine. Which legally, that's if you don't have, you can't see out your rear view mirror, you have right. to have side mirrors. That's why vans can exist. So it's that, but it doesn't have like, I can get that on the Chevy Bolt. Why can't I
asked the same question when they unveiled it last year. It's like, why can't we get a digital mirror on this? You know, it seems kind of silly.
It seems so, and I kept pushing buttons. I'm like, maybe they updated it. Maybe they added it. And apparently I'm just opening up garage doors all over the world.
They are going to add it as an option for the 2024 models. So they've heard the complaints.
It's coming. It's coming. It's just such a weird – it's a weird oversight to have this giant screen come down and then suddenly you just can't see behind you. And when the screen comes down, like on the rear window – there's a little shade comes down so you don't get glare. So they thought about that. They thought about the fact that, well, if you have this giant screen, people are going to get glare from behind them. So as the screen's coming down, that shade comes down as well. So, so you can still watch your shows. One issue, though, and it's only an issue with journalists who are reviewing this vehicle, is that you have to set up like a Fire TV set. Like you can't set it up as a journalist. Like owners can set it up.
It's got Fire TV built into it.
Yeah, so you could watch your Amazon Fire TV, but you can bring it down and look at the graphics and pretty much get the same gist. I don't need to watch.
It is a pretty spectacular screen.
It's really nice. It's really wide, and a lot of these times whenever they have these extra
Lawrence
screens,
Arabia
I'm like,
without
well,
any letterboxes.
Oh, like Panavision.
I'll have to try that when I get one.
All the way around.
So. All the way around. So it's, and I kind of like, well, why wouldn't someone just use their iPad or their phone whenever I talk about these extra screens for other people in the car? Because that's what everyone's doing. Everyone's just looking at their phone the entire time while you're driving. This one, no. This is when you can sit back, put your seat back. It's comfortable. You can have massage seats and you can watch Lawrence of Arabia or The Matrix or Step Brothers or whatever you like. Whatever shows, movies you want to see that is available on Fire TV, and Fire TV is Amazon, which means you can get pretty much everything because you can rent items, you can buy items. So that's nice. Overall, it's a really nice luxury vehicle. It feels big. It is big. it gets the combined MPG is 21. It does 18 city, 26 highway. I drove it around. I drove this to the Mercedes-Benz event, which meant the Mercedes-Benz people immediately like, what are you doing? What's that? And they all went and they went one to go look at it. I got 22.7 miles per gallon while driving it around for a week, which is pretty good for
a big
V8.
No, that's not.
The sedan, yeah. And, there's a lot of stop and go traffic. And I used BMW's, their sort of hands-free but eyes-on, and you have to pay attention, traffic ADAS system. So they have the regular adaptive cruise control, then they have adaptive cruise control with some lane centering, and then they have an adaptive cruise control with lane centering where you can take your hands off the wheel, and the little lights on the wheel and turn green.
Professional is what they call it.
So, yeah, I don't even like using the names anymore because it just makes things more confusing. So it's just a hands-off, but you have to pay attention system. And I take my hands off for about 10 seconds, and I what do I do with my hands? So I just end up putting them there. And, I was stuck in traffic getting home. It took 2 hours to get home from the event, which is 40 minutes away because it ended around 5. Which meant I got stuck in traffic all the way home. But I think the BMW, that system's actually pretty nice, especially if you're stuck in traffic a lot. It's been around for a while. It goes a little bit quicker now than it used to. I don't know what top speed is.
I think it's
probably should have looked that up. Yeah, so it's pretty good. Still, you got to pay attention. I still keep my hands on the wheel just because what am I going to do with my hands? Like I can't look at the phone. I can't, and it's really good at realizing you're not looking at it. It's gotten much better at that. So if I'm looking at the screen, the center screen for too long, it's like, hey, hey, buddy, eyes open. Yeah. Eyes over here.
Yeah, there's the infrared driver monitor cameras are unlike on the GM cars where you get this little module sitting on top of the steering column. BMW has integrated it into the cluster, And if you look carefully at the cluster, you'll see there's a notch like on an iPhone. And that's where the camera is. Yeah.
That's where they sneak it.
If you shoot video, like you can see them flashing.
Yeah, because the frame.
Yeah. The problem with that, the problem with it not being on the column is that if you happen, like I tend to have the steering wheel lower than most people. I don't know why. It's just how I've always driven. And now I have to adjust because when I do that on the Mercedes and the BMW system,
blocks it.
I'm blocking the eyeballs. Yeah, I'm blocking the in-car system. Other than that, so it's not cheap. It's got lots of room. You and three of your friends, if you want to go on a really swanky road trip, this is an excellent vehicle. But you got to have a lot of money for it. So it starts at $113,000. Yeah, and the vehicle I was driving, $149,045.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun is that for $7,250 you get the rear executive lounge seating.
That's great stuff.
That's the one with the theater screen and the whole seat thing. And I feel like if you're going to get this
up,
car,
you can recline.
And the footrest.
Those are
that's
so
where you're
cool.
getting this car.
I love that when cars have that. It's
yeah.
like,
I mean, there's the individual comp, who cares? Luxury seating package. Yeah, you're going to want that. Parking, sure. Driver assistance, yeah. Autobahn package, sure. But yeah, you really want to pay that $7,250, which is more than the cost of my first two vehicles.
God. Yeah.
Your first two.
Is the first two vehicles. My Datsun 2000 was $1,500 and my Honda Civic was $5,000. So this is more.
Just for the special seats.
It also has the screen, the special screens and the screen.
Part of the package.
It's a whole experience. It's essentially a theater experience in your car. Yeah,
home theater on the road.
There you go.
Yeah. And over 3 years, that's like $200 a month or something like that.
That's not so bad. Because in the Discord, Gifted Napper mentioned, when we were talking about the digital mirror, says they'll add it as a $3,500 option next year. Or you'll probably pay $20 a month just for the mirror.
Or you'll rent it, yeah.
Yeah, you're renting the mirror.
Yep.
So you want to see out the back, well, we can do it.
It's going to cost you.
Give us your credit card, please.
What do you got? Give us your credit card. We're more than happy to take your monies. Destination charge, what do you all think?
Oh.
I'll go with $14.95.
I was going to say $18.95, so I'm just going to say that stick with that.
It's a BMW, $995. Not even $1,000. It's right underneath. They BMW's like, you know what? You're paying $150,000 for a car.
We're not going to rook you.
$1,000.
We're not like those other guys that hide the price increases in the destination chart. We're just going to put it right up front.
Right up front.
We're just going to tell you
how much it's going to cost.
Here's the thing that's going to charge you all the monies. It has, you know what I don't like is the automatic doors. I just don't like automatic doors in general. Unless I think in the Rolls, because it has the suicide doors, like you don't really have it. Like those, I guess, make sense for the person getting out. But it's harder to open and close the doors because, you're working against a motor and the car's like, hey, let me close the door for you.
Yeah, you gotta figure out, is it trying to do it right now? And then you just kind of let it go and do it. Or you're fighting against the motors.
I'm not a fan of the automatic doors. And it sucks because it's part of a package. Let me tell you what the package – it's part of the executive package. So it has automatic doors, crystal headlights, fine. But really front massaging seats. That's the only thing I want.
You just want that one piece.
Yeah, but now you're stuck with automatic doors you got to fight with for, the 5 years you're leasing this vehicle and then – and then selling it to somebody else.
To fight with.
So, yeah, BMW 760i X-Drive sedan. Very nice. Very very luxurious. Ooh. And very expensive.
All those things.
And very big screen.
Very big. All right.
That's what my arms go out for.
Nicole.
Yes, sir.
What have you been driving?
I just gave up today the Ford F-150 Lightning.
Did it catch fire on you?
It did not catch fire.
Oh,
it I know. I was like, nope, it's a burning. No, it's still just fine. It did not catch fire. Have they said anything new about the battery thing that I've missed?
No.
No.
They just extended the production pause while they're fixing it.
Okay, that's what I thought I heard.
Is it a fire related thing?
They said it's fire.
One of the trucks in the at the factory caught fire.
Oh yeah, caught fire on the line.
They've apparently isolated the problem, but they're working on a fix.
The fix has not been announced yet. Yeah. So Ford F-150 Lightning that did not catch fire is what I had this week. Despite every single person on social media going, did it catch fire? Just like you did. I'm like, no, it did not catch fire. If it caught fire, there would be video here about the fire.
She's like, I know how to do the internet.
I would have taken pictures, guys. You don't need to ask. So I've driven the Lightning before. This is the Platinum, which is the top trim in the lineup, and it starts at $97,000. So it is not inexpensive. My Monroney did not come with pricing actually worked out, but there were, I think, a few little bitsy extras on there. So it's probably just over $100,000, I think, the one that I have, ballparking it. But if you go with the base trim, you can get it for $56,000, which is still not cheap, but a heck of a lot better.
It's less.
It's less by a lot. It is less by a lot. So there is that, because everyone was balking at the price. The Lightning, what I like about the Lightning is that aside from the fact, it is an EV, and especially that front, the lighting on the front, on the grill, looks very different. In all ways, it looks like when you sit inside, just like an F-150. Like, they didn't do anything to make it look different or like of the future or like, oh, this is our fancy truck. It still feels like an F-150, which is kind of nice. I do love how those front lights look, though, especially at night. That lighting across, that's really cool looking. I think that's neat. I like how the EV companies play with lights. Like, how did that become the thing on EVs? We're going to give it funky lights, guys.
Well, when you get, when
they
you
all,
don't have,
they all saw Audi,
you don't have to have a grill.
And they're like, ooh,
you
gotta, let's do Audi's
some way to differentiate it.
So you put funky lights up there.
Yep.
So I like the funky lights on the F-150. It's fine to drive. It does good. It was pretty cold here. This one has the extended range battery, which the EPA says 320 miles in that battery. I was fully charging it each night and coming out to like anywhere from like 250 to 245-ish miles of range. So it was taking a pretty good hit. It was fully charged and not giving me what it should be. What? I could see Sam, who I can't hear suddenly. Sam suddenly muted.
There we go.
But he was actually waving his finger at the screen.
So fully charged when it's cold, you are going to lose some range.
Right.
Just because, you're using energy for the heat. But the other thing is, did the truck you have the 22-inch wheels?
The big wheels
knock the range down from 320 to 300.
Big wheels.
Oh, so we're at 300. So, because it was a 22-inch wheel, so it's 300.
If you only lost 50 miles of range off of that, that's actually not bad.
It's not bad. I didn't think it was bad when I was thinking it was 320. So it's really not that bad, because it was pretty chilly and we had snow and, a couple days are out there and it's like literally the truck is just a giant snowman shaped like a truck in my driveway, it was pretty cold. Snow truck. Here was the interesting thing, and I thought this was kind of like, I put a lot of stuff on social media about the truck, like all the socials, the TikToks, the Instagrams, the Twitters, the Facebooks, and it's interesting to see what people comment on that stuff. And you know what? The single biggest comment was like, yeah, but you can't really use it. It doesn't charge when it's cold, and you have no range at all when it's cold, and it's not going to drive anywhere when it's cold. And I always see videos of everybody broken down because it's cold. I'm like, you guys, they don't just stop working because the temperature drops. Like, it's not like,
well, I think it's like the listener who asked us, can you charge in the water when it's raining? And we're like, yeah. But it's just, you don't, I mean, A, people don't know, and B, Facebook is just full of misinformation about EVs.
Misinformation
that's the problem.
Facebook?
I know. Well,
I don't think that's true.
I know.
But that was the thing. It's like some of these, some people were asking, hey, it looks snowy in the background. How did that work? And I was answering them honestly. So you lose a little bit. You're fine, blah, blah, blah. So there were some honest, then there were people like, no, you can't really charge it in the cold. I'm like, no, you can. No, you don't have any range. You can't really, literally arguing, arguing with each other.
You have the vehicle, but they're I know, but I'm right. I don't have the vehicle. You have the vehicle, and you're actually doing things with it, but like, they're right.
There was this surety that surprised me that EVs, it's like from people, I don't know if all these, I had one guy who was a Ford F-150 Lightning owner who's like, guys, I have one. I live where it's cold. I drove it this morning. They're like, no. And he's like, what? Like, we couldn't.
You're a liar.
Just accuse Roman, people of this notion.
Roman, Micah, and the Fastlane guys drove a Lightning all the way to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska last summer.
To Alaska.
Clearly, that was just a conspiracy. Like, that's right. It never actually happened.
It was just done on green screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's very weird that because I've had people who. Like people I went to school with, and I'm like, and I'll just start answering questions. I'm like, this is what it does. Like, no, it doesn't do that. I'm just like,
yeah. You do have that, you know, when you check yourself, you're like, okay, I'm not going to argue with people online. But when people like ask,
isn't that what online is for?
I know. But like people that ask and genuinely want to know, you can tell the difference. And it's like, okay, for you, I will explain. You lose some range. It's not depending on quite how cold it is, blah, blah, blah. And people, well, how bad is it when it tows? Yeah, you're going to lose range when you tow. You know, that's a pretty dramatic change to your range, depending on how much you're towing and where you're out. You're going up giant hills, you know, that kind of stuff. But there was this real surety from everybody that, like, well, it's cold, so you can't even really drive an EV in the cold. It's just useless. It's stupid. They never can drive in the cold. Like, people are always, I'm like, the one guy even said, he's like, you know, if you run out of, just because an EV is on the side of the road, it ran out of charge. You know, gas cars do the same thing. If you don't put gas in the tank, it doesn't mean that it was.
And you know what happens to a gas truck when you hook up a trailer?
Hmm.
Its fuel economy drops by about half.
No, lying lies, Sam.
No, lies.
So it was very weird. That was the weirdest thing, like this sort of strange takeaway. I wanted to be like, everybody, you can still drive an EV in the cold. It's okay.
In the cold, it's...
But
yes.
Now I think now is a good
time. He's waving his finger at me again.
to get one of the topics we had for later, which is, can you drive an EV when your power goes out?
Yes, that was on your little list.
Yeah, because we had a massive ice storm that hit southern Michigan last week.
Yes. Storm.
Dropped about 3/4 of an inch of ice on the area where I live, and there was about 700,000 customers that lost power. And there's, I guess, as of now, there's still about 60 or 70,000 that don't have their power restored yet. Yeah, like 5 days later. Ours came back after 2 days, so we were lucky. But what do you do with an EV when your power goes out like that?
You gotta go find. Well, here's my solution is that you get solar and a battery pack because I'm prepping for the end of the world. But that's just me. You can also just go to a charge station. You can find a charge station.
Well,
just
you like can you know the, when the power Sometimes goes out. The charge stations are down too. Like if there's a power outage.
Yeah, it's the same thing with gas stations. Yeah. Though, because the pumps don't work like – there's not a guy like hand cranking the pumps.
That was at my gas station, but that's a whole other story.
So it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, well, where's the nearest charging station?
Yeah.
And do I need it? And then you go there. And it's just like the same thing with gas. It's just more of a pain because gas takes 10 minutes charging if you have a good – you know, if let's say you have a big truck – it's going to take like 40 minutes.
The thing. Like if you're in a situation where where you need to fill up a gas car and power's out and gas stations are out, you most likely, because there's more gas stations to begin with, the chances of finding one that's working are better. And the chances of people going in, even if it's the only one, gassing up is really quick. If you run into the same situation with an EV, same deal, but there's fewer of them, you know, so to finding one could be a bit more of a challenge. Just have to work harder.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, in situations, unless you have something like what happened 20 years ago when there was that massive Northeast blackout where all the power went out everywhere.
Right.
Completely.
Right.
I remember that.
Unless you have a situation like that, most of the time when the power goes out because of storms like this one, the power outages aren't universal. It's like, on my block, and like a couple of blocks around me up and down, we lost our power because some lines came down, because tree branches fell on them. But across the street, they had power.
Right.
And so
this is when you sneak across the street with
an extension cord. Funny you should mention that, because as I was driving out to go to the coffee shop to do some work on Thursday, there was about half a dozen houses along the street that had extension cords running across the street from the house opposite them. So they were borrowing some power.
Borrowing a little juice.
Why didn't you just park the car on the other side?
No. This was actually power for the house, you know.
Like to power for some lights random appliances and lights and things.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Just, you know. Okay. Not for EVs. Just to get some power for essentials.
On our EV, like typically we charge it every night, but every once in a while we'll forget. Like we park the EV like at 3 o'clock and we think we're going to go somewhere else, so I don't plug it in. And then we'll go somewhere else and we'll come back and it's 5 o'clock. I'm like, I'm going to go to the store tonight. I won't plug in. And sometimes I'll have them for 2 or 3 days. And I've never, you know, we've had it like 4 or 5 days where it's never become a situation for us where we're just like, oh, yeah. No.
We have no juice. You know, when you have a snowstorm or an ice storm coming, the thing you always do with a gas car, you're always supposed to fill your tank, right? So you're not stranded. So you're not stuck. You got a full tank of gas in your car. And just charge your EV before the storm hits too.
Just go outside and set it to 100.
Yeah, just let it charge all the way up there, so you got it all.
Also, charge all your little batteries in your house.
And, you know, our local Electrify America station, which is so often non-functional, actually was functioning when the power was up. Yeah, I drove by there.
See, that's the rub. It's like, well, I'll just go to the Electrify America station. You're like,
Go Electrify America. Woohoo! So,
you know, there were some that were working, some that were not.
Yeah.
I actually talked to a Detroit TV station the other day for a story they were doing on this stuff. The reporter actually visited a few different charging stations. You know, he went to a couple of EA stations, an EVgo station, and a couple of supercharger stations. And, you know, one of the supercharger stations didn't have power. The other one did. You know, and so, you know, people were trying to figure, okay, where can I go charge? So it's a good idea to, you know, if you've got, you know, to use apps like PlugShare and others, you know, that can help you find stations that are actually working, you know. And you know, what I told the reporter was that going forward, you know, you're going to see more and more stations that are equipped with battery backup, you know, partly for situations like this, but also, you know, to help them reduce their spike load on the grid, you know, when a lot of people are trying to charge at once and reduce their demand charges. So that and, you know, adding solar to charging stations will help. But, yeah, I mean, it's no different from gas stations. You know, there were gas stations that weren't working because they had no electricity for their pumps. So.
Yeah, you know, EA and the other charging companies were better at their job.
Yeah, well, they're getting there, right?
They're getting there. Well, they want to get that money. They want to get paid.
So can I talk about the other thing that's not specifically EV related that I did not like. I'm curious your experience.
You drove a car that you didn't like?
On the F-150 Lightning, something I didn't like.
It can't be the cookie table.
No, they don't have one, which is just horrifying.
Burrito table
you didn't have a cookie surface in here?
There's no cookie surface. Oh, no, there is a cookie surface. What am I thinking? Yes, there is. There's the cookie surface, yeah. Sorry, wrong car. I'm thinking about it. No,
we
I did. I got
like,
cookies.
Oh, why do you even make the platinum if it doesn't have the platinum?
Table. I did go to Crumbl, and I got my fix of cookies, yeah, which I wanted to take a picture of, and then my husband literally, while I was taking out my camera, had, like, opened the boxes and was taking a bite out of each one. I'm like, could you wait it for, like, 2 seconds for me? But anyway, no. So here's the thing. So Blue Cruise, have you guys used Blue Cruise much?
Yes.
I just liked it. Yes.
You don't know what's going on.
Okay, so here was the weird thing. So I was using it on the way down to the airport on Friday, and it felt like it was ping-ponging me so much so that I was like, are you working or did you stop? Like, there was one time I swear that it was over the line and it realizes it's over the line and it's like, whoa, let's bring it back. So now it is like overcorrected in a great big pickup truck. So it's like whoosh, whoosh. Like it's very disconcerting. I had it on and didn't tell my daughter who I was picking up at the airport. And I said, so I'm going to try something. And I said, driving. She's like, oh, is that why you were driving funny? She thought I was doing it, and it wasn't me.
See, your daughter thought you were drunk.
Now, to add insult to injury, when I tried it later on with my husband in the car and my daughter, my husband said, you got to stop using that. I said, well, he said, it's making me car sick. The motion, the way it was.
Because the motion, because it's not smooth.
It made him car's sake. And he had to close his eyes and roll down the window. And I had to turn off the Blue Cruise.
That's a shame.
Yeah. And ping ponging and moving, especially in a large truck, because you end up getting that.
You get that sort of that body roll thing going. And it's like.
Yeah.
I haven't had that with Blue Cruise. I've had other issues with Blue Cruise that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
And I was actually just texting with somebody at Ford today to see if they have any yet that have the new version of Blue Cruise. And he said, soon, hopefully.
Is that supposed to take care of some of these issues?
It's supposed to make it a lot better, yeah.
Because it was bad enough.
And they announced that last October or November, and they still haven't shipped that software update.
It was the most disconcerting. Like, there were times when it's heavy traffic because I was driving in sort of in rush hour, and there are tractor trailers next to me that I am like, no, we are too stinking close to that guy, and I'm trying to make it go, like, we are right next to all those wheels. Can you give it a little bit of room? It didn't feel like it lines up, and it literally, there was one time it totally did throw me over the line. Like, it just drifted right over the line, realized it was like, whoa, and when it threw me back, I was like, oh my God, this is awful, and I turned it off. I'm like, I feel like it's actually, and I was, obviously, you can take your hands off, but you got to be paying attention, which I was, and there was no one next to me, so I was kind of letting it, like, how far are you going to let me go either side here, Blue Cruise? Too far is the answer. It lets me go too far. So it made my husband car sick. My daughter couldn't figure out why I was driving funny, and I had zero confidence in this. Zero.
So Blue Cruise fails again.
It failed, yeah. I was really surprised.
It's just one of those things. They have to do better. It's going to get better over time.
I hope
hopefully.
So.
That's the goal. But yeah, these, especially right out the gate. It was funny because when the Super Cruise first came out, they would center it right in the middle of the lane. And what was happening is that when we were driving from New Mexico to California, it felt like it was really close to semis. And so in the next update, whenever there was a semi, it would slightly move the car away from the semi, so people in the car wouldn't be
Genesis does that too.
Uncomfortable.
It's
sort of like, if it's a big vehicle, it moves it over just a scooch, so you don't feel like, even because it should be centered. And that should be the correct thing to do.
That's not what humans do.
But the people in the car, they're like, nope, that's not what humans do. Like,
I feel like it needs to be, you know, you want it to pay more, like, sort of be better at things than humans are, but it at least needs to be able to mimic the stuff we do well. You know, if it's not mimicking that natural driving that we all like, if you're a huge tractor trailer, you're gonna go a little bit further to the right if the tractor trailer is on your left, just as a little safety precaution. And you know, if it doesn't mimic that, you don't trust it as a driver or the passenger. That was my complaint. That was literally the thing that I didn't like about it. I liked everything else, but I did not.
The whole time I'm using it, I'm just hearing the Blues Clues song in my head too. So that's also
Blues
Clues. Blues Clues.
All right.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. Well, let's move on to some of the other items of the week. So, Robbie, you drove that BMW to a Mercedes-Benz event.
As I do.
What one does.
next time I'm in California, I'll be driving a Kia to a Nissan event. So there's that.
Oof, that's a bigger.
So what was going on at Mercedes-Benz's Silicon Valley facility?
A lot. So they showed us the interior of the new E-Class, not the exterior. That's not ready to be seen yet, apparently. The interior has a newer version of MBUX, and it has this thing called what is it called? They're like scripts. They're essentially like little scripts for your car. Like if this, then that. Mm-hmm. If anyone uses that for their home,
so automations that you can do.
Yeah, little automations that you can set up. So let's say every morning you get up at 5 a.m., it's going to be cold. If it's like under a certain temperature at a certain time, you can say, oh, when it's at this place at a certain temperature at this time, I want you to heat up the seats to this, and I want you to have the heater to this, and I want you to do this and this. And so you can make these little scripts based on your location, the temperature, traffic, and time of day. And it's actually kind of cool that you can say, hey, I want this to this. And you can set them up with – you'll eventually be able to set them up to your phone, which is nice. You'd be sitting on – because sometimes you don't want to just sit – there's a lot of time where I'm just sitting in a car in my driveway like testing.
I do that too.
It just seems kind of like people, like the neighbor, like, what is that guy doing? He's just sitting in his car for 20 minutes, not going anywhere, just the car running. I don't think people want to do that. I think they, you know, maybe when you first get your car, you're like, oh, I'm going to set this thing up and it's fun. But then as time progresses, you don't just sit in your car. So the idea that you could set one of these up with your phone and then it syncs to your car is
so I was going to ask you how you do it.
Like,
do you have to do it on the screen in the car, or it sounds like you do it in the app?
You can do it in the car. The app is coming. But the car is not even here, so who knows? The app might be out, the app might be updated by the time the car. It's the Germans. They're not going to be like. They're not going to promise more. They're like, this is what we have now.
This is what we have. Enjoy.
This is what we know is going to happen. It's never like, well, this could happen and this could happen, huh? No, it's never that. It's always like, this is what we will have, and the other thing, we're not sure, so we're not going to say yes. Like, oh, all right. So that's cool, but the cooler thing, and this is really, it's such an inside baseball thing, and it's a big tech nerd thing, is the MBOS, Mercedes-Benz Operating System, and they are taking control of the entire software stack of their vehicles.
Wait, does MBUX go away?
No, MBUX stays. MBUX is part of MBOS.
MBUX is just the OS.
Okay, I wasn't sure if. Okay.
Yeah, MBUX is just the interface.
Just clarifying, I'm like, so MBUX going? I like just saying MBUX.
MBUX. So instead of the way they do it now is where you just grab a bunch of different off-the-shelf systems and you try to cobble them together. Mercedes is like, nah, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to go from chip to cloud is what they're saying. And so they're going to create chips with SoCs, so system on chip, so the software's on the chip. And they're going to have their, instead of buying sort of off-the-shelf components from their suppliers, they will tell their suppliers, build this chip with this operating system on it. And, you know, then they'll be building their own operating system, which is Unix-based, and we'll have QNX as well. But to not go into the weeds too much, the idea is that because of this, they can deploy over-the-air updates like super quickly. Like instead of waiting months because, oh, we have to do this, and now we have to tell, you know, these people that, oh, we need to change this system on chip, and can you send us this, and oh, we got to get this, and we got to get this person involved, and now this person has to be involved, and now we all work together so we can do this one software update to our car. They can just say, oh, we want to do this thing. And they do it all themselves. They don't have to deal with third parties. They don't have to deal with outside companies because they control the entire stack. They can just, oh, well, it's ready. Send it out. Done. And so it gives them control over the entire software experience inside the vehicle. And it also helps them sort of battle, you know, Apple and Google when it comes to, you know, their iPhone mirroring and Android mirroring, which is CarPlay and Android Auto. They want to reduce that as much as possible. And they've done that a bit with MBUX, especially with the zero layer. I like zero layer because it's just the map and then a few things. And that's all I really care about. And so they're trying to do that even more. So the only thing you're really plugging your phone is for like to charge it and, you know, as a phone and as a multimedia like storage device. So it's It's software is really tough. I mean, you can ask Volkswagen
or any automaker.
Any automaker.
Yeah. Really, any automaker. I think they sort of jumped into it and thought that, oh, we can, you know, well, Apple can do it and Facebook can do it and Google
can do it.
We're like, yeah, but they have this really deep knowledge from all these people. It's not just like young kids who are coming in. You have these people who have been working in the industry forever who can sort of get them to that spot, whereas, you know, these automakers really didn't have that legacy amount of wealth when it came to like really deep software integration beyond just saying, oh, the car is going this fast and here's some GPS. So it's a bold idea. I think the first car with it will be out 2024.
Next year.
Yeah. Or 2025.
2 years.
Yeah. I should have looked at my article before I started talking about it.
Didn't you write stuff about this?
But you write so much stuff.
The number of times I write a thing and I talk about it here and I'm like, I got to pull up my own story because I don't remember anything about it.
Later part of 2024.
Yeah. 25. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be introduced in 2024 and then in showrooms in 2025 will be the first system. It's, you know, it's going hand in hand with their MMA, the Mercedes modular architecture. And it's just Mercedes saying, you know, we're investing heavily in the future. And in that investment, we're going to have as much control as possible over what's going on in our vehicles, which is, again, it's smart because, you know, A, they have the money because they're Mercedes and they essentially just print cash compared to other automakers. And if you have that money, you should be really making that investment because it does give you control over the whole system.
But it also gives you responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it does give you responsibility.
I haven't done, you know, that have tried to take control like this, haven't done a great job. Yeah, I mean, look at GL. You know, I mean,
That's the thing is that you end up taking responsibility regardless of who's building your system.
True.
You know, if someone on Volkswagen's, you know, if Volkswagen, like, let's say the problem isn't their system, it's a third party, like they couldn't get the integration to work correctly. At the end of the day, it's still Volkswagen's fault. It's still Volkswagen's problem. This way, if it's Mercedes-Benz's fault, they at least know they don't have anyone else to blame. That's the other, you know, they are the only ones to blame. They have to own it. Whereas, like, you know, Volkswagen can say what other people are doing it, but everyone, you know, the average consumer, all they see is Volkswagen can't make an infotainment system that isn't laggy.
Yeah, we'll see if Mercedes-Benz can actually pull that off.
It's super tough. That's the crazy thing.
I heard from one other person who was there at that event, you know, and they played around with, I don't know if it was the E-Class interior or just a buck that they had, but, you know, he said the software was pretty janky. Now, of course, this guy is a Tesla fanboy, so I'm not sure I should take anything that he says without a big chunk of salt.
And it's also, that if it was the E-Class, that's still the old version of the operating system, and then they told us up front, right, this is pre-production.
Yeah, I mean, it's still,
we're still working
2 years
on this.
Away.
We're still
from,
making this work
from hitting the streets.
Yeah.
So there's obviously, you know, lots of opportunity to improve it, and hopefully they will. And I know, you know, at the event, you know, they also, you know, one of the things that, you know, with this emphasis on software and services that, you know, automakers are doing, you know, they're talking about new revenue streams and everything, and their CFO talked about, you know, one of the areas that they see as a, you know, besides just the connectivity subscriptions, the other biggest area that they see as a revenue stream is upselling, you know, for more capable driver assistance and automation. So you'll get, you know, stuff, a certain amount of stuff is standard, for, you know, like hands-free driving as standard. And maybe even, you know, eyes off level 3 stuff is standard, but to get a level 4 highway driving system, you know, you'll pay extra for that, and that could be a subscription or just a one-time purchase. You know, they'll have different options, and these new vehicles are all going to have Luminar LiDAR on them, in addition to all the other sensors that they're putting on there.
Yeah. They were very I think they're trying to get ahead of the whole subscription backlash, because while they were talking about, like, you can either get it from when you buy your car, you can pay for it like you would a regular option, or later on as a subscription, or you can purchase it later on. You know, trying to get ahead of that idea where you buy the car and then later on they're going to nickel and dime you for things. You're like, no. If you want the thing, you can buy it now or you can get it later on. And the luxury brands have that option, have that sort of, it's a little bit easier for them to do something like this, whereas say like Hyundai and Toyota, that's going to be a bit tougher for them, a bit tougher of a sell. I mean, Toyota's backlash on the auto starting or the key fob starting thing.
Yeah. One of the other things that Mercedes talked about is their integration of Google Maps platform for navigation, but they're not doing Android Automotive. They're integrating the Google Maps platform, on their system and having their own interface on it. So it'll have the Google navigation components and everything and all the map data.
Places. Their big thing was places.
And they're also going to have support for this alternative Android app store from Forvia, which is a major automotive supplier, that you'll be able to download Android apps to this thing. Again, even though it's not running Android, presumably they're going to have...
they have a container that they're going to run.
A container, with the APIs in there, so you can run those apps in there. So... that'll be interesting to see how that works.
Hmm. Yeah, I asked them about those apps. I'm like, well, who's vetting these apps? Is a third party vetting them? Are you vetting them? And they're like, we will be vetting the apps as they come in. So you can't just you can't just write a random app and just toss it in
just
there.
Have an app.
And then Forvia, the supplier formerly known as Forcia, but they rebranded after they merged with Hella. They're also vetting all the stuff that's going in there as well. So, they're a pretty reputable supplier. They've been around a long time.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's really hard. But Mercedes has a lot of money and they've been hiring a lot of people. So
hopefully
it just comes down to hiring people and having the money to do it. And Mercedes has both.
They got the money. They got the people.
Doesn't mean it's going to work.
They have the pieces if they can just put them together the right way.
Exactly.
So next one, sticking with screens for a moment, GM has apparently patented a self-cleaning touchscreen because the problem, the biggest problem with touchscreens is fingerprints.
Yeah.
They look pretty gross after you've been driving for a few days. And so this touchscreen has additional violet micro LEDs to create an invisible ultraviolet light that you can't see. And as the screen is coated with a catalyst that when it turns on these ultraviolet or violet micro LEDs, it basically zaps the fingerprints, zaps the moisture and everything and gets rid of the fingerprints. Should be interesting to see how that works.
They evaporate into the air, so you're now. Does that mean you've got like greasy air now? I know on a really small scale. Does that mean you have greasy fingerprinty air?
It's breaking down the oils into something else.
They evaporate.
Now, exactly what it is that's breaking it down into, I don't know.
I know. What am I inhaling now? Is it
a toxic cloud?
So say your fingerprints. Like, I want to know what it is. Like, I've got greasy. I just ate fried chicken fingerprints. Is it going to smell like fried chicken in my car because I made fried chicken fingerprints in the screen?
That's a bonus.
Like, yeah, is it going to smell like what your fingerprints were like?
I don't think so because it's not lifting the oil off. Like I said, it's breaking it down. And since most oils are, they're some sort of hydrocarbon compound, it's probably breaking it down into carbon dioxide and water. Maybe some other stuff, whatever else is in there. And then just evaporating that. I don't think it'll be anything that you can smell.
Okay.
It's a lot of work to just have those fingers that you can only see when the screen goes dark. Like when you're taking photos, you can see it. But most of
inevitably, when you're taking photos, fingerprints, they just—it's like they just show up. It's like it was clean, You look, it's perfectly clean. You pull your camera out. Whoosh, there's fingerprints everywhere. You're like, what just happened? All I did was take my phone out of my pocket. Yeah.
A person jumped in your car.
Tap, and ran away. Like there's a little like elf that comes in and smudges it.
Sticking with GM screens, GM touchscreens, the 2024 Cadillac XT4 is getting a mid-cycle update that includes the same 33-inch curved LED display that's in the Cadillac Lyriq. And the question is, which one will there be more of on the road, Lyriqs or XT4s with the screen?
Probably XT4. XT4 is like the car I always forget exists. There's like a couple cars from a couple automakers that you sort of forget about, and the XT4 is one of them. But like, there's a new XT4. I'm like, a what?
What's that again? What?
Oh, the Cadillac.
It's not a bad vehicle. It's their compact crossover.
It's not bad.
It just sort of disappears
in my mind. I don't know why.
Is it just not? It's unremarkable. It just kind of does its thing quietly in the background, and then someone's like,
"Well, I wish
it did
do it quietly in the background." Because my one complaint about the XT4,
oh geez,
is
what?
The road noise.
Oh,
there's a lot of road noise that gets transmitted into the
car. That's fair.
Which is not what you want.
It's not what you want from a luxury.
It drives good. You know, its performance is good. Handling's good.
A lot of road noise.
I like the way it looks, but there's too much road noise that gets in.
Well, you can always just get a Lyriq.
Someday.
But there'll probably be more.
Someday.
Hopefully.
Someday.
But the XT4 does get 5G. Gets a 5G Wi-Fi hotspot as well. So,
fancy.
That's nice.
Let's see. VinFast. Apparently, VinFast is finally going to start delivering cars to customers on Wednesday. It's Monday night as we're recording this. So Wednesday, March 1st. Are supposed to be the first deliveries of the VinFast VF8.
Wasn't that originally October, November, December?
I don't know. What did they tell you when you went to Vietnam?
October, November, December, depending on who I asked.
And January, February, you know, passed.
January, February. So that's like 3 to 5 months after what they said.
Well, you said that, you know, you said that they should take an extra 6 months.
And they listened. Apparently, this is entirely.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Just make it work.
Yeah. I mean, clearly they're paying attention. You know, when smart people talk to them, they pay attention.
Yeah, that was totally it. I had that kind of influence. Yeah, sure.
But the other big thing that we've been complaining about with the VF8 is the pricing, you know, especially the pricing they wanted to charge with the battery subscription.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, I think the price without the without the subscription, it's just, you know, straight-up price that they had been planning to charge for the VF8 base model was $599 for a 24-month lease, $599 a month. They have apparently reduced that down to $399 for at least the first batch of cars for the city edition. So we'll see. You know, we'll see if it's actually any good. It'll be interesting. I've actually seen a VF8 here, around my area several times in the past couple of weeks that is equipped with LiDAR and a bunch of cameras on it, and I've reached out to VinFast to try and find out what they're doing with that. Because as far as I know, they don't have an engineering facility around here. So I'm not sure what they're doing with that one, because it's kind of an odd sensor setup that they've got on it.
Now that they're actually going to deliver some, I'm curious what, you know, if they've managed to tweak it a little bit and improve it in that 5 months or whatever, or if it's just exactly what I saw in Vietnam. But I feel like the first people who are going to get it are going to be like, no matter what. You know, you're the first in line to get a car, a new car. You're the first Fisker guy, the first Lucid guy, the first, you know, VinFast, Rivian. You are like, I am a cheerleader for your brand. Your car is amazing. As the wheel falls off, you know, but I'm a cheerleader. Punk. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
All right, last item for this week. there was a video that was posted. Top Gear magazine, one of their writers, Jack Ricks, did a roundtable thing with four very prominent high-performance car guys. Gordon Murray, John Hennessy, Matej Rimas, and Christian von Koenigsegg. and went through and, you know, asked them each a bunch of, you know, asked them each some questions. And one of the questions they asked was, if you had one final tank of gas or fuel or battery charge, and you could have any car you want to drive for that one last tank, what would it be?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What would your answer be, Sam?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. It's my Miata, of course.
The answer is Miata.
The answer is Miata.
apparently Christian von Koenigsegg agrees with me, even though he builds ridiculous hypercars, you know, with over 1,000 horsepower.
The cars with his name are not what he would pick. He would pick the Miata.
The car he would pick is his NA Miata. He actually still owns an NA Miata that he bought back in the 90s, new, a 92 Miata.
Oh, wow.
And he still takes it out and drives it regularly. And that is the car that he chose.
That's a good choice.
Cool. I mean,
like supercars, you hear like about a supercar, it goes crazy fast and stuff, but it's there's
you just want to enjoy driving like the last tank of gas. You just want to go for a drive and you want to enjoy it.
Nice manual transmission.
You're not going to pick a Koenigsegg. You're going to pick a Miata.
Wind flowing through your hair.
Just kind of.
Have you seen Christian von Koenigsegg recently?
I'm thinking maybe the wind in the hair is not accurate.
Wind flowing through his eyes.
Yeah, he's bald.
Oh, wind flowing.
Oh, he's very bald. I just Googled. No wind blowing through his hair.
Still the wind.
Wind flowing over his bald head.
So yeah, I thought that was fun. I'll include a link to the conversation on YouTube in the show notes. And also part of that, Gordon Murray, who created the McLaren F1, you know, still the fastest naturally aspirated production car of all time.
Yes.
He chose a Lotus Elan, which of course was the spiritual ancestor.
Which is the Miata. Which is the European version of the Miata.
So still the answer
which is
Miata.
Euro Miata.
Yeah. Miata or Miata, take your pick.
And Matej Rimas chose an E30 BMW M3, so like first generation M3 from the 1980s.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's a good pick too. Again, not super fast.
And
but...
I can't remember what Hennessy picked, but it was also
something with like eight wheels.
It was an old
like a tank.
It was an old American muscle car. I think it was an old Cutlass 442 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Sure.
Okay.
None of them picked a hypercar.
Which says something about hypercars. Like they're cool and they're fast and they're but it's
guys
like
that, the guys that build them. Yeah.
Are like, I don't want one.
Like I all the time fast. Woo. Fast in a straight line is boring.
All right. Let's answer a couple of questions and comments here. First up from John Halkius. And actually, this is probably a good one for you, Nicole. Since you
I know. I was like, I just gave it back. And I didn't. I knew where the charge port was. I didn't look.
John says, my F-150 Lightning does indeed show the charge port location on my driver display, since we were talking about that last time. Just like with the gas tank. You know, it shows a little arrow there. There's an arrow noting location, just like an ICE vehicle, right beside the battery icon, pointing to the left as the Lightning charge port is on the left front fender. So that's one example of a vehicle that does have the location with a common reminder.
Okay. I have to note that it's, if you don't know, there's two spots. Like there's what looks like a charging port on both sides.
Yeah.
It looks exactly the same. One you push it, pops open. The other one, you can push that little thing all you want. Nothing happens. Ask my husband. He's like, it won't open. I'm like, you're on the wrong side of the car. Car on the other side.
When I had the first background briefing on that a couple of years ago, I asked about that, and they said, yeah, we put it there for symmetry.
They shouldn't have. It's confusing.
But you can't see it. That's the thing. You can't see it from the other side. It's a weird decision.
Yeah.
Because I don't have two like holes. I don't have two little doors on either side of my BRZ. So for symmetry, for the gas.
Because it's.
I have a Maverick right now in my driveway. There's not two little ports on either side. It's for symmetry for filling it with gas.
And the Kia Niro plug-in hybrid that's in my driveway right now, it does have, you know, it's got the the gas port and the charge port on the same side. They're both on the left. The charge port's on the front fender, but it does not have any indication on the instrument cluster where the charge port is.
Oh.
Secret. It's like an adventure.
All right. The second thing from John was about free charging. So in regards to your discussion, the 30-minute time limit on some free charging is not adequately regulated by charging companies. Some vehicle owners with that free charging have discovered that unplugging and plugging right back in starts a new 30-minute session. The big problem is that vehicles like the VW ID4 come with 3 years of free EA charging, and the locals who own those cars are more and more commonly charging to 100% at EA stations while reading or sleeping in their cars because, well, free. When I first got my Mustang Mach-E 2 years ago, we were in a golden age of EV ownership where EA stations in particular were always available and road tripping was not an issue. Now I hesitate to take my Lightning or Mach-E on a road trip because chargers are starting to have lines due to the manufacturer's use of free charging with the sale of vehicles, which is also discouraging installing home charging for those who can. Those who really need public charging, whether on a road trip or because they live in housing that does not give them access, like an apartment, are being blocked by these people. That's where all the anger and hate is coming from. Tom Malagny has an excellent YouTube video on this that I highly recommend, Why Free Charging Sucks. And I actually just watched that earlier today.
He told me he was doing it. He's like, it's coming out. I'm like, oh, cool.
The 250 kilowatts that Ford gave me with both vehicles is more than enough to introduce new EV owners to public charging. I totally agree with what he's saying here. This makes total sense.
Boo. And, you know, don't unplug and plug in.
And this is, you know, partly one of the reasons why Tesla eliminated free supercharging for life. You know, when they first launched that with the Model S, you know, there weren't very many EVs. You know, there weren't many Model S owners. But over time, as you got more and more of those vehicles on the road, you know, especially on like holiday weekends, you know, or, you know, places where people were going a lot, you know, you would start seeing these lines of people waiting, you know, 2-3 hours to charge from a supercharger, which is just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, that my early Tesla reviews, I was always just waiting for a supercharger, just waiting in line. And they have like a valet there at certain places that would tell you, all right, your turn to charge. You know, it was a big pain. But
well, I remember the one time I went to Tesla's headquarters in Palo Alto for employees there. They actually had a valet because they had, you know, limited number of chargers out front.
Oh,
and
had
a lot of people who were driving EVs. And so you could just pull up your car and, you know, they would valet it. And, you know, then when a charger opened up, you know, they would go grab it and go plug it in for you, charge it up during the day, and then go park it somewhere.
Move it. See, yeah, that's
that would
nice.
Be cool.
All right. Last one from Brandon Ellis. I've been waiting for a while now, and this was a great excuse to send you guys an email. I bought a used 2016 eGolf SE last summer. This has been my first EV experience, and it's been a blast to drive.
Yay!
And I agree. I always liked the eGolf.
eGolf is dope. Love the eGolf.
It was fantastic. As I was listening to your discussion on charge ports, I had to share that my eGolf does have the charge port
location
indicator.
Hey, there you go.
So VW,
hey, good job.
VW got it right on that one.
Okay.
Is it a picture of a little gas can? Is it like a little gas pump, or is it like
it's a little plug?
I can't remember. Yeah. I'm gonna see if I can find any old pictures of the eGolf.
I probably have one somewhere in my Google Photos archive.
Yeah.
So that's it for questions this week. Before we go, I have an interview that I did in Chicago with Jim Owens from Ford. He's the Mustang marketing manager. Talking about Mustang Dark Horse and racing programs and stuff. And I will tack that on here after we say goodbye. And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, everybody. It's Sam. And this week during the 2023 Chicago Auto Show, I had a chance to catch up with my old friend Jim Owens, who is the product marketing manager for the Ford Mustang, to talk about the Mustang Dark Horse, racing programs, and more.
Hi, Jim. Since the last time we spoke for Wheel Bearings, Ford revealed the new 2024 Mustang, the 7th gen Mustang. And you guys had a big surprise that at the time, which was the Dark Horse. And at that time, back in September, at the Detroit Auto Show, you had the windows all blacked out. You know, people couldn't see too much detail. It wasn't much to share. You've been trickling out some more information now. Tell me everything you can about the Mustang Dark Horse.
So, Sam, you know how much I love the performance aspect of our Mustangs. This Mustang named Dark Horse was the horse you didn't see coming, right? And, you know, our performance derivatives, where we've done Bullet and Mach 1 and, you know, GT350s and GT500s, you know, those have been names that we've used previously. This is the first new one in 21 years. So it had to be special to carry that new moniker in there. The 500 the 500 horsepower, fourth generation Coyote motor that brings in through dual air boxes, double throttle body, some of the components from the Shelby GT500 engine in there to make that 500 horsepower is so, it makes us happy. Like, to say naturally aspirated 100 horsepower per liter on a normal crank engine, like, that's cool stuff and yeah. representative of something you didn't see coming. Like Gen 5, you know, our 4.6 liter V8 had 300 horsepower. Like the Shelby GTs had 315. It is that thing you didn't see coming, that 500 horsepower barrier. Think of like the 07 GT500 supercharged 5.4 iron block. 500 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm generating that out of a Coyote. It's so exciting and something that you didn't see. But, you know, you've heard the 500 horsepower beat. But that's one of the things that literally helps make this a new nameplate within the Mustang family. What you're seeing here at the Chicago Auto Show today, which is where we happen to be, is that stripe package for the appearance package. So this is the Dark Horse appearance package with the handling package. And the painted stripes. Now, the painted stripes are like...
That's something that's only been available before, I think, on GT500
for sure.
Yeah, I think they offered it as an option on 350
on
as
the
well.
Heritage.
Okay, yeah.
Right, as we were going out, you could do the painted stripes. At least on one, for sure. But on this painted stripe, what the design is, if you think of like when we do the wind tunnel testing, you know, and you put the smoke or the vapor or whatever that is, and you blow it across in there and it kind of goes so over.
Visualizing the airflow pattern over the hood.
That kind of represents it from the striping standpoint, right? Like if you think of like the little dome in the center of the hood, that's going to be a little, air is going to be a little closer, and then how it falls off, the air is going to be a little bit, so it's darker in the center and lighter. I mean, it's just kind of cool little piece that ties appearance to the performance aspect of it. And then the new stuff from the internal that, you know, when you couldn't see in the darkened windows because it was September and now we're building it, from the titanium shift knob, hollowed out from the center so it's cooler to the touch, so it doesn't heat up in there in that ball. And I'm a right hand like under grabber shifter, so it feels like performance close at hand. So not like the cue ball version of it, but the shape of it is really incredible. And that blue colored titanium that highlights the stitching that's in the Recaro seats that is also blue, and then the blue that goes across like the carbon fiber panel inner. The blue that comes across in the door jam that when you open it up, it really gives you that sense that it is different not only from the exterior but the interior standpoint. It still has all of that interior technology that's on the base Mustang that's in there. The Dark Horse that will pop up on the screen, you know, kind of like the Shelby that pops up in there. Those are some of the really cool things on the interior. And then from a performance standpoint, the carbon fiber wheels.
Yeah.
Right? Like the, you know, unsprung rotational mass, reduction of 37%, about 21 pounds, that really helps a skilled driver perform better on a road course. And then they look beautiful. And the first, like, you can see the pattern from the, you know, historical Mustangs that we have over there, that five-bolt pattern is now similar.
Five-bolt, the five-spoke is something still, that goes back to the various earliest days of Mustang.
And we're able to do it now working with Carbon Revolution to put that on this pony car, which is so cool. I mean, if you think of the Ford GT one, it's that four-spoke pattern. The four-spoke pattern on the GT500 that was more the beveled,
right.
I know your listeners can't see me moving my hand, but the beveled look, that give it that flat, and then it has the blue interwoven in the carbon fiber that gives it that hue that just ties to the blue ember color that that we have.
So there's a finish on these carbon fiber wheels that, because when you did it first on the GT350, they were painted because you need the
UV
the UV protection for the epoxy, so it didn't break down.
Because carbon fiber is a living material.
And now Carbon Revolution's come up with a new material
that
there.
Allows us then to put in there that clear and show the weave pattern, because as you're laying up carbon fiber, like matching that weave is not easy.
Right.
Right, because each of the pattern has to be there. So that clear is allowed to show that carbon weave that looks so cool. Now, you have to be up close to see the weave, but when you are up close, like at a car show walking around, you can see that the patterns match, and that clear coat that they put on there has allowed us to do it, which is really cool. Carbon Rev has been working really hard with us over the years on this carbon fiber wheels, and, you know, it's still the difference in weight when you grab an aluminum one.
Oh, I know. It's amazing how much difference it makes.
It makes it, and I'm not a good enough driver to actually duplicate, you know, improve times over a period of time, but when I'm in my sweet spot and I'm with the carbon wheels, you can feel the difference, which is pretty cool.
And you also feel it, you know, if you're using this as a daily driver, that reduction in unsprung mass is also, you can feel that in the ride quality of it as well, because it allows the wheels, it reduces that inertia of the wheels so they can move up and down and follow the road contour. So it's more comfortable to drive on the road.
And, you know, with the MagnaRide suspension, right, with the metal particles in the viscous fluid that you send the electric charge through that changes the pressure that's in there, that is adapted for this wheel, like written for this wheel. So that even makes that, when you're in normal mode and you're driving down Woodward, when you go over some of those horrific potholes that southeastern Michigan roads have, it really does improve the ride quality.
So when is the Dark Horse going to be available? Is it going to be available from job one when you start building the new Mustangs this summer? Or?
Yeah, we're saying that it's going to be available in dealerships early summer, and it'll be the Mustang GTs along with the Dark Horse and the EcoBoost.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to something. Another part of Mustang heritage, which has been motorsports. Yeah. Motorsports has been a key part of the Mustang story since 1965, or 1964,
I should say. First race wins, Tour de France, 1, 2, 3 in Mustangs in 64.
And so, you know, for many, many years, I mean, and certainly in the earliest years and certainly a lot over the last 20 years, building turnkey race cars has been a key part of the Mustang story for Ford. You've had a wide variety of different cars, the CR500s, the Cobra Jets, the
FPS 350Ss, the 302Ss.
Yeah, all kinds of different variations. And over the current generation, the sixth generation car, for the last several years, there's been a GT4 car. GT4 is a very popular sort of...
Rolling series.
Yeah, not quite entry level, but, you know, kind of lower level sports car racing formula that, you know, is not cheap, but, you know, relatively modest cost, let's say, for, you know, people that want to get into racing, they're not professionals. You're going to have a new GT4 version of the Gen 7 car, and you're also going to have a GT3, which is the next level up, you know, and also a customer race car, as well as there's going to be a factory race program, at least in IMSA, with GTD Pro. So, talk about the GT4. You know, what makes a GT4 Mustang different from a stock or, you know, or a Dark Horse Mustang, and then what takes you from a GT4 to a GT3 car?
Yeah, and we haven't gone out and announced all the differences yet as it's going through.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
In general terms.
I mean, when you set up it first, if you think of when we launched Gen 5. Right, we did some of the racing vehicles, even like the Mustang Challenge series back in, but it came after, right? Gen 6, even the same thing, right? That FP350S didn't come out till a year afterwards than when we went. Here, when we did the reveal, we had all of those race cars up there at the reveal on the screen, showing them the video that we were showing going in. Mustang, the company, obviously, Henry, back in the day, founded on racing, 1901, sweepstakes, you know, beating Alexander Winton and starting the Ford Motor Company 18 months later. That racing heritage has been not only in the company, but in Mustang, as you described. And so what you end up doing with it, and specifically with the Dark Horse, which is the one that we're leading in with these racing things, right? The Dark Horse R, Dark Horse S. Like, you, those are the vehicles that when you're billed for... for the actual participation, not necessarily in the sanctioning body races, but more in the street racing, like, you know, the street racing.
Track days.
Track days, yeah. Sorry. No, we don't race on streets.
Right. Never race on the street.
On road courses and drag strips only. You know, those starts at body and whites in the plant, like in the assembly plant, and we'll ship out there. So what you're trying to do with those series is, you know, change obviously the weight distribution as best as you can, make them better for that, and doing that through the suspension aspects of it and the powertrain aspects of it that aren't street legal. And I know the Ford Performance team is going to be announcing all of those things soon. I can't wait for folks to do it.
And when are those cars going to start racing? I know I've heard reports that the GT3 is starting track testing imminently, if it hasn't already. But when will we actually see those?
So the Super 8, if you saw that down there, it was right after September when we did the testing down there in Australia, right? Those were the first cars that go out there. I don't know the exact dates when they're going to be out there. That's something I'm going to have to dig into deeper. But I know that it is going to be coming surrounding this launch of this generation, and so that we can hopefully provide those race cars that people want, from going to a test and tune at Milan, you know, on a Friday night, to being able to go out to Gingerman and do your road racing in there, hopefully relatively soon.
So I'm curious, you know, from a business perspective, you know, having these turnkey factory built race cars. And this is one of the things about GT4 and GT3 is, you know, customer teams can order these cars from Ford and from some of your competitors, and they basically come ready to race. I mean, you know, typically they will actually, you know, tear them down and rebuild them so they know how to service them and everything, but they don't have to do the development on these cars. From a business perspective for Ford, is this something that is a profitable add-on to the Mustang business, or is it more of something, a marketing cost? So is it a profit center or a cost center for a company like Ford?
It's part of the relevancy of the brand, right? And if you look at overall Mustang, I mean, that is, you know, we don't do things for charity, right? So there is a business model.
Well, you do sometimes,
there.
Like
a charity car, that's fair. That is fair. But yeah, there is a business model in there for us that would be a good business model, but it's more about tying into the brand and what the brand means.
Okay. Anything else about the new Mustang, whether it's from the EcoBoost base model up through the Dark Horse or racing, that you want to talk about right now?
You know, for me, it's about the experiences of trying to pull in a new generation of Mustang owners. You know, I'm getting a little long in the tooth, right?
Are we all?
And you know, what we need to do for that sports car segment, and specifically for Mustang, to keep on building Mustangs, is bring in that younger audiences. And the things that we did and invested in this vehicle really are going to reach those focus audiences, that younger audience. So to bring them into that sports car segment, you know, we've done six generations before. We're starting the seventh generation of Mustang, and that will help us continue Mustang along. And that's what I'm most proud about.
How's the response been from younger buyers or potential buyers to the new design, and particularly the new interior?
Specifically the interior, when we did the focus group research, because we haven't had customers into the vehicles yet, was off the charts as far as the younger audiences go. And the older audiences, it was kind of funny. One of the guys was quoted and saying, "I felt like I could launch a missile from this thing." So we really believe that it has hit that spot, and the marketplace will show that. But we haven't had customers yet in to be able to do it. But yeah, like that Unreal Gaming technology that's in there that, you know, powers their Rocket League games that they do now. Younger people personalize their phones and their technology. You know, Mustang is about personalization and making it your own. And now we've given them the technology that is in their audience and how they personalize things. And we're expecting it to be a home run.
All right. Well, thanks as always, Jeff.
Cool. Thank you.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.